Hey folks, Alex Newman here. We just wrapped up another Red Pill Expo, and I'm with the big cheese here, the legend, Ed Griffin, of course, and it was phenomenal, as always. It also happens to be Ed's 90th trip around the sun. Ed, this was another amazing Red Pill Expo, and I wanted to talk first about your final speech. You said something that was really profound, and I know you emphasize this a lot, but I want the viewers to understand this too. You talked about the need for people who value liberty and who value individual freedom to acquire and wield power. And I think a lot of libertarians and liberty people kind of instinctively recoil at that. But I mean, you made such a compelling case. Could you walk people through why you think liberty people, individual rights people need to get involved in the political process, need to run for office and gain power?
Yeah, I sure would. I think it's a very important lesson. And I'm one of those people, by the way, as you know, that in the beginning, I was against power because we know that political power, or in fact, all kinds of economic power, political power, psychological power, usually results in people being corrupted by that power. Maybe I should say always results in that. And Lord Acton gives us that famous quote about power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. So we've all been imbued with the idea that power is an enemy. And so it's hard to get your head around the idea that that is an automatic guarantee that we lose the contest. Because when you're up against power, just being on the right side is not going to do it. You've got to have a righteous indignation, and you have to push back and defend the truth and defend justice and all those things, because it's just, it's the old idea that if you're part of a big group in a room and you're all just standing there and running, there are two or three people at the other end with automatic machine guns, you're going to do what they say.
Right.
And so they had the power. And so it's a fact of life. And it took me a long time to realize that we had to have power, but it gave me a sick feeling in my stomach because I thought, well, okay, I acknowledge that. But that means that eventually we, or someone who follows us, will be corrupted by the power, and we will not have failed in our long-term mission. So it took me a long time to realize that, wait a minute, there are ways, perhaps we haven't discovered them yet, but there have to be ways that we can design a system in which there are certain checks and balances that would prevent people from having so much power that it would corrupt them. Now, the fact that we haven't ever yet done that in history is discouraging because it tends to lead you to think it can't be done. But I got to thinking about it, and you probably remember my reference to the letter to Thomas Jefferson, because that's the key to the whole thing. After the signing of the Declaration of Independence, we went on to fight the war, then we had to form a constitution and form the Republic and all of that. And at the end of that process, at the end of that process, Jefferson received a letter from a doctor who was a friend of his. And we know about this letter because it's preserved in the collection of the Jefferson collection, and it's there. And I guess they have the original handwritten copy and all of that. So it's a genuine thing. And the doctor said, Mr. Jefferson, now that we have this new government, how can we be sure that only good men are elected to office? And Jefferson's response was on the edge of being irate. You could tell he was restraining himself. He said, speak to us not of good men in office, but rather let us bind men down by the chains of the Constitution. And there was the secret. It was right in plain view all the time that Jefferson was saying, don't be absurd. Good men in office? What a ridiculous idea. Come on, boys, let's figure this out. And so he said, you've got to design a system that restrains that kind of condition from happening. And so they came up with what I would consider to be a beta model. Our Constitution was the first time that was ever tried. So we had the checks and balances. No other system of government had ever come up with that before. And of course, they had a lot of other ideas that had to be watered down because of compromise necessity. Not all of the colonies wanted to give up so much of their power. So it wasn't a perfect product, but it was very, very good. And for a beta model, it was amazing. So now we've gone through and we've seen where the cracks were in the Constitution, because our enemies have, you know, driven the wedges into those cracks and opened them up and seeped into the inside. And so now the next time around, and there will be another time around, when people will have a chance to create a second model, and they will have figured out some more restraints to put into the system. I'm totally confident that it can be done, and I even have my own rough draft of what I'm thinking of calling the Universal Constitution, to be applied to any organization, whether it's government or commercial or what, to make sure that the leaders of that organization are not allowed, or their means of getting rid of them, let's put it that way, if they do show signs of yielding to the temptation of concentration of power, that the system will be designed from the very beginning to have a corrective process for getting rid of them. And that takes a long time to discuss that. But anyway, so I finally came out the other side of that thing. It can be done. Let's do it, you know? So I'm no longer worried about the idea of reaching for power, because we have to. Otherwise, we cannot win the struggle against tyranny. So in a nutshell, that's what I'm talking about. We have to do it. And I think the analogy is that, you know, guns are dangerous. They're very dangerous. People get killed by guns accidentally. The only thing more dangerous than having guns is not having guns. And the same is true with power. The only power is dangerous. The only thing more dangerous than power is not having it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It's so true, Ed. And the whole audience obviously agreed with you. You're here. You're in friendly company here. But one of the things that you talked about that I think was unique, and I think caught a lot of people off guard, was the need. And I've talked about this too. For a global movement on behalf of liberty. You know, we here in America, I think, are so accustomed to just what's an American struggle for freedom. And you really emphasize that there needs to be a global movement in every country, in every community, for individual rights and for liberty. Why do you think it's important for people around the world to get involved in this struggle?
Well, there are a couple of reasons. I think the most obvious one is that the opponent that we are fighting against is an international movement. It's not a national movement at all. We've seen that in the latest COVID theater, where all of a sudden all the countries of the world are doing the same thing at the same time, using the same vocabulary. Everything is detailed, and you know there's a master plan behind all of that. You cannot fight something like that at just one spot here and a spot there. You have to have a very large movement to do that. And then the other point of view is that the ideals, the principles that we're fighting for are beyond national borders. And it's not that we have to have an international movement, but if we've got the right answer, it will be an international movement, because everybody in the world has the same problem. So it's not that we have to create something that's artificial. If we have the right combination, it will spread around the world. And then we know we've really got it, you see. And so our principles are not just American or some other nation. It's not national. It's not cultural. All cultures are involved, all races, all religions, all lifestyles, all economic statuses. It's a universal human quality that we're working to defend and restore. So we have to think outside of we think outside of our localities, but that doesn't mean we have become indifferent to them. My gosh, they're our local home, it's our community. And we do have to give them priority, but we certainly must not exclude this idea of forming a global movement.
Excellent, Ed. And you ended the evening on a really optimistic note. I thought it was fascinating. And you kind of walked through the story of your life and all these problems and all these tragedies and all these things that you thought were so horrible at the time. And you wrapped it all together. You know, we're in the midst of this huge tragedy. I mean, everybody's lost their freedom. Our businesses are being shut down. And yet you sounded so optimistic. Explain to us why you're so optimistic.
Well, it's very simple. In my life, I know it for sure, and I've observed it in so many other lives, is that every one of the great tragedies that I've experienced, and I've gone through some tough ones, maybe others have done the same thing, I know they have, in every case, I look back on it, and it's the best thing that could have happened to me, because it moved me in a different direction from which I was headed. At the moment, I thought it was a great tragedy because it blocked me from my goal, but it turned me in, say, 90 degrees, and sometimes 180 degrees, you know? And looking back in retrospect, it was the best thing, because it put me on a path that led to something wonderful. It was much better than what I was reaching toward in the beginning. And it goes without exception. Now, maybe there are exceptions. I won't argue that point. But I do know that, as far as I can see, the world is based on the probability, high probability, that humans have the capacity to turn lemons into lemonade, as they say. So if that is true, and I believe it is, we look at these tragedies, these crises that are going on today, the obstacles, the terrible, terrible things that are happening. And if we really believe what I just said, we've got to say, hot dog, this is going to bring us to a wonderful point in the future that we can't see right now. But if we respond as responsible human beings and do what we have to do, we will face down this crisis and this challenge, and something very, very good is going to come out of it.
Absolutely, Ed. And you know, one of the things that I think is so interesting, and I want to ask you how you do it. You've been here for 90 years now. I mean, that's almost incomprehensible. On the flight over here, I was reading a book that somebody had recommended to me based on a video I did that you wrote. It was published in 1968. And I looked on the back, and it's endorsed by the head of the International Bar Association, the former head of the American Bar Association. I mean, these are very prominent people. So a generation before I was even born, you were writing books that were being endorsed by some of the brightest legal minds in the world of the time. And yet here you are, 90 years old, sharper than a lot of people when they're 45, 50 years old. What's your secret, and what lessons have you learned over all these trips around the sun?
Well, I don't really have any secrets. I mean, everything that I think is helpful for longevity, people have been preaching to me. You know? So I didn't invent anything. It's a secret. No secret, I should say. First of all, let's take luck. Luck has got to play a role in it. And okay, we put that aside. The next thing is as we get older, we learn that maybe some of the things we do, the toxic things we put into our bodies, like smoking and drinking and all that stuff, is not good for us. What do you know? And we get smart and we think, well, maybe we should cut down on this or eliminate it completely. Can you imagine that? And then we start thinking about, maybe we should start putting good things into our body, like nutrition. And it's as simple as that. Once you realize that the food and the air and the soil and everything around, electromagnetic radiation, all the things around us are toxic, and we start focusing on what cumulative impact that has on our biome, you know, our genes, our systems. We think of ourselves as flesh and bones, but we're really electrical creatures. All of our chemicals are held together by electrical charges, positive and negative. It's that simple. And you expose our bodies to an electrical frequency that happens to resonate at some point in our immune system or genetic system. It could shatter our immune system and change our ability to survive as a living creature. And we wouldn't even see it or smell it or taste it or anything. So you become aware of those things and you try to avoid them as best you can. And of course, another thing that's no secret is you're supposed to exercise, you know? Big deal, big surprise, right? You got to keep the muscles moving and so you don't lock up and all that. Let's see, what else that's no secret? That's about it. And get a good woman to fix some good meals for you, you know, and keep you away from the chocolate-covered peanut butter cups.
Very good advice, Ed. Before we let you go, give some tips to the folks out there. You know, someone's sitting at home, they're confused, their business is shut down, they see their freedoms going away, they see their kids being brainwashed in the school. What are just some concrete suggestions that you can give to people out there to get involved in the freedom fight? What are, you know, a couple things that you think are really critical for people to do? And what are the best websites to go? Right now we're in Lafayette, Louisiana. It's the 2021 Red Pill, the second 2021 Red Pill Expo. We'll have some more next year. But give people the good websites to go to, some good books. By the way, that book I mentioned earlier, folks, it's The Great Prison Break, right?
Great Prison Break. The Supreme Court leads the way.
Yeah, absolutely fascinating, folks. I'm not quite done with it yet, but it's fascinating. But Ed, tell people, where can they get information on this? How can they sign up to get involved? I know there's no announcement yet on where the next Red Pill Expo is, but where should people watch? And just a couple suggestions on how people can get involved.
Well, yeah, there's the first step for everything, isn't there? And so we've tried to create that first step, and we call it the Red Pill University. Now, we're here at a Red Pill Expo. What's the Red Pill University? They're really pretty much the same thing, except the Expo is an event. It happens twice a year. And it's a means of reaching out into different communities and bringing people together so they can meet face to face and shake hands and say, oh, hi, where do you live? You know, and, oh, What's your telephone number? Maybe we could get together and get into mischief. You know, we could do something politically. You know, we could find a candidate or whatever we want to do. And so we're trying to bring people together. That's what our enemy does not want. They want us locked in our homes. They want us socially distanced and all that. We want to bring people together. And so, and to inform as well and let people know they're not alone. And it's a great morale builder. So the expo performs that function. It's twice a year. But now the university is every day of every year. And it's basically divided into two parts. One is a cyber, we call it campus. And of course, that's on the internet. That's how we spread information and talk to each other. That's for everybody. But we do want people to form into local groups. And we call those campuses as ground campuses. We're building ground campuses. And we hope to have at least one in every county in the United States and in other countries as well, might be provinces and so forth. Now, those are be small groups of people, anywhere from 6 to 60. And I can tell you from personal experience that when you get a group of 10, 20, 30 people together, and they all have a mission in mind, they're going to accomplish it because there's a multiplying effect there. Two people working side by side independently will accomplish the force and effect of two people. But if they join forces and cooperate, now it's two times two. They can accomplish as much as four people separately. You get three people, they accomplish as much as nine, four as much as 16, and so forth. And you get 60 people together, and what's 60? You know, you get a lot of impact there. Small groups, and we've learned this from our opponent, they have local groups everywhere. And we say, how did they do this? This is how they do it. It's not a magic formula. It's just they have a dozen people, sometimes a two dozen people, and they work together, and they make things happen. We can do that, and we must do that. And that's what our Red Pill University campuses are all about. So now you ask, how can people get involved? Well, the first step is to check us out, of course. Go to our websites and see if you like what we're doing. I think most people will like what we're doing. So the place to go is redpilluniversity.org and redpillexpo.org. And when you're ready to become part of a group of people that want to organize together and really do something to change the structure and the trend, well, now go sign up at Red Pill University. Take the tour. There's a little a logo there on the front page. It says, take the tour. So that's a couple of pages of what we're all about, what our mission is, and why we're doing it. And if you want to become part of that, well, then you sign up. You become a patron of the Red Pill University, and that's the cyber group. And then the next step is, you want to form a local group or participate in a local group? Now you can take the next step and become involved in or create a campus. And it's sort of a step-by-step. And everybody finds their own place and their own comfort zone. But everybody has to get active and do something, because we cannot just let this juggernaut of collectivism and tyranny continue unopposed.
Couldn't agree with you more, Ed. Any final words of wisdom before we let you go?
Words of wisdom, let's see. Yeah, I think I could think of a couple of things. I think a good advice for most people is, first of all, question authority. The next thing would be to respect nature. I'm talking about health matters in this case, yeah. And the third thing would be follow your convictions, stick with it, do what is right. Don't let the crowd deter you.
Excellent. Well, Ed, we really appreciate it. This was another phenomenal Red Pill Expo. We'll look forward to seeing you at the next one. Folks, if you can make it, be there or be square.